B-Pod Studios.
They get you going every day.
I don't care for the sportsman-like talk.
Toucher and Rich.
At least let me live in a fantasy world that for 3 hours you hate each other.
On 98.5, The Sports Hub.
This is obviously from the 19... Or this is from 2021.
Yeah. It was released last week.
This was not in a movie.
No. Do you really not know what this is?
No, I do, but I'm
us the best.
In the news yesterday, too.
Two worlds collide, rival nations.
Wait, who is
this? It's a pyramid pass.
Oh, it's from Rocky IV.
Yeah.
But what band is this?
Survivor.
Is this a new singer in Survivor?
Yep. Eye of the Tiger is not sung by this guy.
Wow, talk about mind blown.
Did you know that?
Once again,
how the hell would I know that?
I do not know that.
They sound exactly the same.
Maybe. This was on a loop in every high school football locker room.
Yeah. Just let the soundtrack roll.
The whole soundtrack. Every single song.
This is when Rocky flies to Russia and they get out and Paulie goes, this doesn't look that tough, Rock.
I hope they got my comics out here.
Right,
this weather is detrimental to my sinuses.
Well, I know that they are saying that there is the 40 minutes of new Rocky IV, and everyone's speculating if finally Paulie will bang the robot. I know that is something that people are speculating.
It's called Rocky IV, Rocky versus Drago, the ultimate director's cut. That's the whole title. And they're showing it one night in theaters, and then the next day it's on, like, on demand. And
when's that happening?
It's like November 11th or something. It's in November, and it's one night in theaters. And then there's a question and answer with Sylvester Stallone afterwards. All the questions will be answered. And I watched the trailer, and it's like if they added 40 minutes to Rocky IV, what percentage of that would be more montages? Like if you just
39.
If you go to the formula of Rocky IV, it's at least 50%.
Yeah.
But then the rest of it is like, you know, I want to know more backstory about Bridget Nielsen's haircut. Why is it so, you know, fantastic?
Yeah.
Will
she's
Adrian
all business in a very conservative environment.
Yep. Will Adrian open more prizes on her birthday? Open up your prize.
You don't think that's the best Rocky? You're trying to. Like, that is the best Rocky.
There's no question. It's the most watchable, rewatchable Rocky.
You watch it. Like,
no, Rocky 3 is the best Rocky because Rocky 3 is hysterical. Rocky 3 is legitimately funny. The training sequence in Rocky 3 is superior to the training sequence in Rocky 4.
Where they're running with the short shorts on the beach. It's phenomenal.
Quiet down. The idea that he goes, I'm going to the black area town is funny. And then B, that he's like, I'm in a ghetto gym. And then they have a full pool at the ghetto gym.
That's fantastic.
He's real slumming it.
Because everyone knows.
Every ghetto had a swimming pool indoors.
Right, exactly. Because that was the training regime for all the in all the ghetto gyms. Hey, listen, it's 4,000 square feet of gym. Like all of a sudden they have like this room for a pool.
Yeah.
And
every wife would take that trip and go, you know, we never really had a honeymoon. Meanwhile, they're in the hotel room at a $50 a night motel.
Right. And it spoke to the fact that in order to train, which led into Rocky IV, in order to train, one must be in the worst conditions possible.
Right.
Like, so they were like, what's worse than being in like Watts? And they're like Russia.
Well, the reason.
Well, no, but he like in Rocky IV, he like scales like the Russian Alps in work boots.
Oh yeah, of course he does.
He doesn't even really train in Rocky IV. He just kind of.
Are you kidding me? He lifts a Pauly in the wheelbarrow.
Yeah, and all those rocks he like brings back over his shoulder.
Yeah, he's doing manual labor.
Doesn't need to spar. Doesn't need to spar at all. Just like ducks under a rock.
Where's the pool? I need to get into a pool.
And they have the comparison against like Drago, who is like a science experiment.
Yeah, nature. Versus science.
Yes, I did get that. I got that nuance.
But the best thing, the reason why I will say the Rocky IV training montage is better than the third one, and I agree with you. The third one's fantastically funny. It's just
I finally beat a black guy in running.
That's right. He finally did.
And he got faster over a two-week span, which always happens.
But in Rocky IV, the reason why that montage is so phenomenal is that he gets to Russia, and he starts training, and it's nature versus machine. That goes on for 6-7 minutes. And then Adrian shows up. There's 30 seconds of dialogue.
And they go right back into another eight-minute montage. Yeah, that's right.
It might be 15 minutes minus the 30-second donut hole in the middle of Adrian, that it's all montage.
That's right.
It's funny that you mentioned how he says, open up your prizes, because you know Stallone thought that was like the cutest thing in the world.
Open up your prize.
Look at how cute and simple Rocky is.
It might look like a snake, but it ain't going to bite you.
The fight is unintentionally funny, too.
Well, the fight in Rocky 3 is the best. The fight in Rocky 3 is hysterical.
You wore him out by letting him punch your head.
The ringside announcers say, right? They go, oh, no. They go, oh, he's getting pummeled. And they go, oh, wait a second. Like, they say it out loud. Rocky's got a strategy. He's tiring him out.
Letting him give him brain damage. Breaking his nose. Like, what a great strategy.
The last thing in the world I want you to do is hit me in the face in a fight. And my strategy is just to let me, that you swinging your arms and hitting my face is going to have affect you way more than you just battling him.
But I am not moving my arms. I'm conserving my energy. But he's just hitting me in the face.
In Rocky 3.
I'm so tired. I just keep hitting him in the face. And the sound effect, Stallone doesn't put his hands up at all.
He's like, come on,
just naturally, you would go like, oh, like, imagine not flinching. And that's what the real thing that Stallone pulls
off. But in Rocky III, did he end the Cold War? No. Was there a cultural significance to the outcome of the fight? No.
If I can change, we all can change.
What if that guy wasn't even saying what Rocky was saying?
And that's a good point.
And that's why.
He might not know.
Gorbachev stood up at the end.
You Russians are far better than me, is what he's actually saying.
Free bread for the Gorbachev knockoff.
You Russia rules.
If I can change,
you can all hook up with my wife. And I can change. And her mother. Everyone can change. Free for all afterwards.
Hands up. See, we don't even know. We don't know.
Could be saying anything.
Free bread. Everyone.
Free bread. and here's the biggest crime. I don't know if you heard this part. Apparently, in the director's cut, where they've added 40 more minutes of film, the robot is out.
Oh,
they
that's
edited
right.
the robot out of the movie.
Well, because it doesn't stand. Because Paulie got caught in real life.
Yeah,
his character got his penis caught in a pencil sharpener.
What was the song? What was the song that played when he was in, like, in the car?
No easy way out. Robert Tepper.
And then you had the personalized license plate. Southpaw. Southpaw.
Right.
Hey guys, I got a little trick for the script. I got to call with the President's prize. This is cute.
That's the best point I've heard. Hey, listen, this is pretty, because everyone knows about Pauly banging the robot, but him saying prizes is the best.
Yeah.
Hey, everyone, I got a little twist I'm going to put on this. This is going to sound real dumb.
Open up your prize.
Sly,
is it true the script is 4 pages long?
Well, I saw some of the stuff they're adding in there, and there's more like Drago dialogue, which is just fantastic.
That's great.
And there's on top of it, like when he's lying on the mat, you see like in a sepia
tone. Drago had like 4 lines in that movie.
Yeah, right? And that's why it was great. Yeah. Like, he was fantastic. Right. He was a monster.
That was the whole idea.
Wait, what were you saying though?
So like Rocky be lying on the mat after he got like knocked down, and now they've added in like in sepia tones, like Mickey going, "Come on, Rocky, you're out again."
For real?
I didn't hear no bell.
Wait, for real?
Yeah. So they added even more back in old movie clips into Rocky IV. With basically No Easy Way Out. All it is
what you missed on previous episodes.
And they just
that's
showed
the other
right.
thing about right. yeah. the other thing about Rocky III that's great is that Burgess Meredith dies.
No one helps him.
And hang on a second, because Bert's ready to interrupt me. But Burgess Meredith is dying in Madison Square Garden during a prize fight, and like they can't get him a doctor. Like the suspension of disbelief
is impossible.
Like there's 5 billion doctors there. We're in the biggest city in the world.
Yeah.
At a fight.
In the center of the universe at a prize fight.
Can someone find me a doctor, please?
And they just let him lie there dying.
The snakes in the press won't let the doctors go. Like, the press is like, no way.
Leave him alone, guys. Keep the room empty. Nobody come in while he dies.
Yeah, like, but the whole thing is, like, the press is, like, all gathered. And, like, the doctors, like, you're supposed to believe the press is just like, no. We know the guy's dying, but no. We need our pictures of The Rock.
Yeah, Rocky 3. I like them both. Obviously, I love them both. I don't really. And then I think Creed is the best film, I think, of all the
Creed's Rockies. Really good. Okay, so Creed's
I haven't seen the Creed movies. They're good.
I never saw two.
The second one is
fine. The second
one's
not.
It's fine. The first one's really good. You know what? Rocky Balboa has maybe one of the best speeches of all of them. That
I would
movie
agree.
Sucks, but that's got.
I left that.
It's
you guys
not
did.
About how you get hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and get back up.
Is that keep that like scene forward. Where he's like outside the restaurant?
Yeah,
or whatever?
Yeah. When he's talking to his son.
How you can get hit and keep moving forward. Yeah. Oh, that's the best one.
Like that is like an actual well written, awesome chills type of scene. Yeah. Whereas like Rocky 3 and Rocky 4, it's just like eating like a face full of like runts. You know, just like it's just sugar. Like give it to me.
Well, Rocky Balboa, we had to see in order to interview Sylvester Stallone. Alone, and I left like 5 minutes into it. I was like, I can't sit through this thing.
Because Adrian just disappeared. It was like, she died of the woman cancer.
That's right.
It was like the whole explanation.
Does that movie start with Rock sitting in a graveyard?
Yes.
Does that movie starts with Rocky sitting in a graveyard? Yes.
The graveyard is the budget of the film.
But you're right.
I had to pay myself.
But you're right. You know, Rocky 4 and Rocky 3, anybody who says Rocky, because Rocky 1 won a bunch of awards, fine. I dare you to watch that again. That's a depressing movie.
It's really depressing.
Yeah, and Rocky 2 is pretty good. But I'll tell you what's shockingly rewatchable. Is Rocky 5.
Really?
You want, like, laughs.
I think I've only seen that once.
It was on TV a while back, and I think it was a Rocky marathon, and I just, I couldn't turn it off, because Tommy Morrison sucks as an actor. Yeah. He's awful. The Don King type of characters.
White.
He is white. And then it's like, you need some help, Rock? Sing no Biden contest.
That's right.
I mean, there's some great lines in that one, too.
The last fight with the sequence out in the street, which takes, what, 15 minutes?
Yeah,
sue me for what?
Really funny to watch.
Did that bomb at the box office?
Yes.
It was awful. Yeah.
It was awful. Wasn't
killed the franchise for about a decade.
It was like 1990, right? Like,
I don't remember.
I feel like Rocky IV was 85, maybe?
84, 85, somewhere around there. So.
But they filmed Rocky V, and then Stallone was so ashamed he didn't go back to it for, what, 10, 15 years?
Yeah.
But then he did Rocky Balboa thinking that it was, like, artistic, and that bombed.
But
then they saved it with Creed.
I think people liked, he got enough like a praise for it that he said, all right, well, maybe I will shift to not being the main character and we'll get like a young Creed in there. And you're right. The first Creed is excellent. Like that's a really good movie.
I think that's the best like real, like if you're judging something as like a real drama. But Rocky III, for the reasons I just mentioned, is absolutely ridiculous. Ladies and gentlemen, oh, Rocky, yeah, he's tiring him out. He's tiring Clubber Lang out with his face.
That's right.
I keep hitting you in the face. I'm getting so tired.
Water ring the bell. Ding, ding.
And then that really garbage Leroy Neiman painting or whatever that guy is.
Yeah, it's a still shot. That's
and the
right.
super cool special effects with the two gloves hitting each other and exploding. It's like the worst special effects ever. You can see the firecracker go off
that
inside
was four.
Of it.
That was the beginning
it's
of
the
four.
Beginning of, yeah, but well, listen, the ring the bell, ding, ding, was the
like
end of three and the beginning
running
of four.
Towards each other? Yes.
Yes, of course it was.
No.
He'll be precious. Wink. I'm cute. Dumb. I'm being cute, right? This is funny, right? Hey, Polly. You fall in love, you're so lonely. Put a strap a hustler to the face of the robot. She loves me.
What?
Put a hustler on the face of the robot. It's like a woman.
I see.
Press the red button and ooh, hold on.
Ooh la la.
It's got a vacuum on it, Polly.
Oh, man.
Polly, I got you some. It's real, real. The best is the expression of wealth in the 80s was like that garbage robot that no one ever had. Like no rich person had a robot.
Like what can it do?
Like in Wall Street.
That's right, in Wall Street in the backyard. Yes, I remember
in
that.
In Wall Street.
It was actually there
no,
for
in
a
Wall
reason.
Street,
yeah.
Like that Polly robot is in Wall Street.
Yes.
And it's supposed to show how rich Gordon Gekko is.
That's right.
So it could slowly bring a beer from the kitchen into the room, and there was a phone on it. Whoa, worth every penny.
Well, like, no one had one. Like, you know, you didn't go over to your rich friend's house and they had, like, a robot rolling around.
And that's the thing, though. If you had a step up or a step down, robot is in big trouble.
Yes.
There's no negotiating a stair.
We're breaking up. I'm going up the stair.
That's right.
And that's when it turns into the Terminator.
Polly, come back. I'm on the porch. Nope. All right. We'll be back. We'll talk to Bert Breer about football.
It has been a tough time for Rocky after Mickey rolled a 7 during the loss to Clubber Lang, and now he's turned to his oldest rival, Apollo Creed, two of the great heavyweights of all time. And after a difficult start to training, Rocky has now decided that it's time for a swim. And now Rocky and Apollo sprinting on the beach, running to who knows where, older now but still running against the wind. Their training outfits are interesting. Very tight tank tops and very tight and way too short shorts. They're running now in slow-mo, and Rocky pulls away for the win at the finish line, now frolicking in the surf in a lovely warm embrace in the California sun. Things are getting weird. Is this still a Rocky movie?
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
What they say in the morning, you'll be talking about all day.
This is a dumb conversation, but, you know, why the hell not? That's what we do.
Toucher and Rich, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
All those things are super personal. You know, we had a great relationship. I think everything was handled the right way. You know, we handled everything as gracefully as we could. It was an amazing, like I said, time, and it was handled perfectly. I think everyone understood, you know, where we're at, the people involved in the situation, and, you know, things worked out for the best for all of us, and we're all trying to do the best we could do now. It's what happens in life. I'm just excited to go up there and try to beat a really great football team. That's ultimately what this week's about. It's not about the quarterback. It's not about, you know, the fans or the home crowd or relationships of 20 years. It's about two good football teams going at it.
This is Black Sabbath with Dio.
Yep, with Ronnie James Dio.
Is this Mob Rules?
Oh, yeah. Which true metalheads will tell you that the Dio years in Black Sabbath are almost as good as the Ozzy years.
Well, some Sabbath fans go so far to say is that this album is the best Sabbath album.
And I would say they are on drugs.
Well, like, they were.
I just can't stop laughing at Dio whenever I hear him sing, because I just think Carla for Cheers is the front man of a band.
The best is when Dio got pissed off that everyone was co-opting the devil sign that he did with his hands. He's like, my mother used to use it to ward off spirits on the street. Now they're all stealing it from me and misusing it.
You should have trademarked a hand sign.
The best is he was like a huge Yankees fan too, so he would be see him like all dressed up in like a like in a Yankees game.
Well, him and Billy Crystal together, you know, would make quite the pair.
Well, Crystal towered over me. Crystal would just block all his shots. Bert Breer is a senior NFL reporter and lead content strategist for the MMQB. Getting down to business with Bert Breer is brought to you by Bentley University, a force for business, a force for good. Learn more at bentley.edu. So, Bert Breer, here we are. And the Vegas line here is at 7, mm-hmm. and they're not moving it. 85% of the action is on the Tampa Bay, and Vegas is sitting tight. What do they know that we don't know?
I don't know. I mean, I guess the implication would be that if the money's moving, that the line should be moving too.
Yes.
Yeah. And this seems to, if you listen to Dan Lifshatz yesterday, he seems to believe that, well, he thinks the Patriots are going to win outright. And he seems to believe that Vegas thinks or knows that there's something up because of that very reason.
The reason I bring it up is it's not just Dan. Is that the Boston.com, Eric Wilbur, had something where he had picks from around the nation. And it was like concerning a lot of like dudes from like CBS Sports and dudes from like that, like people are like, what's going down?
It's not a hot take if there's like numbers behind it. You know what I mean?
Right.
Well, predicting a win isn't a hot take.
I mean, the Bucs aren't flawless. Like, the Bucs, I think, are a worse team now than they were a month ago because of their injuries in the secondary. And so not having Jamel Dean, not having Sean Murphy Bunting, I mean, are they going to have some version of Richard Sherman out there? Ross Cockrell, who's been on like 15 different teams, is like an important player for them. I think one of the biggest questions is whether or not the Patriots can actually take advantage of that. And like our indications early on from what we've seen from the receiver group is maybe not, you know?
Yeah.
And like that's the thing about it is like this isn't a perfect Tampa team. But the question is, like, where their flaws are, can you take advantage of those?
Yeah.
And, you know, I think the other part of it is just sort of what they'll be able to do to exploit the Patriots up front. They haven't been able to get pressure the same way they did last year. And I think what you're seeing with the Bucs is they've been managing their older players to sort of get through the year. And so, you know, and, like, I think JPP might be out, like, right now. I got to look back at that. But
and what do you know about Gronk, too?
Well, I mean, Gronk has a rib injury, so...
So what do you know about the injury itself? Because now we're hearing...
I heard you guys talk about that. I haven't heard he broke his ribs. I mean, during the break, I'll send a couple texts out and see if I can find out before we get
out
of the
show. Sure, that'd be great, yeah.
But I don't, like the fact that, like, you know, it'd been out there that his you know, he'd come back with, negative tests on the ribs.
Yeah.
If he really does have broken ribs, like, obviously that would sideline him for a while.
Yeah, when would you have to report that?
All they have to do is put it on the injury reporter's ribs.
Okay. Yeah,
they can't lie about what it is.
But to get the replacement, to be able to move someone up.
Like, if he's out for 6 to 8
well,
weeks.
Well, if he doesn't travel, then they have the Bucks have to report that.
Okay.
So, like, we would know Saturday afternoon to get somebody up onto the roster. If they were going to do that and they were going to move him off the roster, it has to happen Saturday by 4.
I mean, it seems to me like that is significant. Like, if he doesn't play,
yeah, it although does Cam, seem but they like have they have depth there though. Like, Cam Brate's a good player,
sure.
And like, so I don't think. I mean, they've been going without Antonio Brown the last couple of weeks.
Yeah.
And so, like, yeah, you lose a tight end, but maybe you go and play 3 receivers more, and now you have Antonio Brown to go with Godwin and Evans. I don't think the Bucs' ability to throw the ball is going to be the problem. To me, it was interesting because I had this conversation with Teddy Bruschi about what the Patriots are going to do to the Bucs and what Belichick's going to do to Brady. And Teddy actually thinks, like, Bill's going to try to play on Brady's emotions. And he brought up to me how, like, back in the day when they used to play against Peyton Manning, he said they're going to play him exactly like we used to play Peyton Manning. And he said Peyton Manning, like, I remember Bill came into the meeting room, the linebacker meeting room, and said to us, he's like, fellas, this week you got 6 guys in the box to stop the run. That's it. And the whole idea was basically daring Peyton Manning to run the ball, to check to run play.
Oh, wow. This is what my theory has been.
Right. Is it?
I came up to my own. To dare Brady to keep handing off the ball and to see if he'll be disciplined enough to continue to do that.
And it sounds like something that, like, would be easy, right? But what Teddy said to me was, like, it wasn't until the AFC Championship game in 2006, and what was that, like the 6th or 7th time they played, that Peyton actually did it.
Wow.
And he told me, he's like years later, you know, he works with Jeff Saturday on ESPN.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess Jeff Saturday told Teddy, said, like, Peyton's receivers and linemen had to, like, freaking tell him, run it, check to run.
Well, the reason that I thought that might be the theory is because of the Mannings, because I was watching the Manning cast when Green Bay was playing Detroit, and they showed that they had their 2 safeties deep. And they kept saying, is Rodgers going to have the discipline to just take what they're giving him and just keep handing it off? And so I thought that was interesting. And then it made me think, yeah, like, Brady's going to want to throw. And so if you tell him.
And if you think about, like, it's you know what it is? It's a Super Bowl 25 game plan where, like, the Giants wanted that to be, like, fewer possessions is better for us.
Sure.
Yeah, yeah.
The shorter the game is better for us.
Yeah.
So, like, let's dare Buffalo to hand the ball off to Thurman Thomas, right?
Yeah.
And it worked. Like, the Bills' offense still played well in that game, but they were able to limit them enough where the game was shortened and it played into the hands of a team that was in that game with a backup quarterback. In this game, like, you don't want to get into a shootout with Brady, right? So how do you prevent that from happening? Dare him to hand the ball off to Leonard Fournette and Ronald Jones.
Mm-hmm.
And say, if you're going to beat us, you're going to beat us with those two. But we're going to flood the back end of the defense with defensive backs.
Is that good? Is this team good enough to stop them, though? That's the problem.
And that's the issue. Yeah. I mean, like, and that's part of it is that, like, one of the things that's come up is like they're without Steph Gilmore, who do they have that can physically, I'm not even talking about how good they are, physically match up with the size of Evans and Godwin?
Sure.
That's the thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. But so like even if you flood the back end with, you know, however many guys,
it's like, going to push them around a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, like, it's
But here's the thing, Bert, is that their run defense sucks. You just look at yards per carry. Just look at the Jets game.
Right.
And the Jets can't run the ball except for against the Patriots. I mean, if I'm Belichick, like you said, I'm willing to take that.
Just
like,
wave the white flag.
Yeah. If you want to eat the clock, if you're picking up 4 or 5 yards a run, that's fine. We hopefully can stop you in the red zone when things shrink a little bit. And then, you know, worst case scenario, you've had the ball for 6.5 minutes. You score, that shortens the game. Then I can come out there and you know, do some of the same. And I kill clock. And like you said, that would be my, I don't know, what do I know, but that would be my strategy. I'd want it to come down to a field goal game. Like, you know, who's the best field goal kicker?
Yes. Bert, do you think Tom Brady has the discipline to do that? Do you think the emotions will get the better of him? I mean, he's done it all. He's seen it all. He knows what he's walking into. But that's the question. Aaron Rodgers may not have that discipline. Does Tom Brady have
it? It's interesting because, like, I think when he was a Patriot, he would have. Like, you know what I mean?
Sure,
like,
sure.
I think when he was a Patriot, he would have had enough people on him about that.
Well, if you are wondering if there's going to be some emotion that gets the best of him, it already has. He stayed an extra hour and a half at practice the other day because obviously he was pissed. This game means a lot to him, and apparently it affected his voice, if you believe him, and that he didn't get COVID from his buddy Antonio Brown. Which
I'm sure that AB was being very responsible.
That's right.
Just a freak accident that he got COVID. Right.
Does he still live with Brady? Because I mean, that's the first thing I thought of when there. I was like,
well, that mansion's big enough where they don't have to see each other for a while. I have a feeling.
So. I mean, if staying late at practice is, it's neat that Dan knew that. I don't know if that would throw me into hysterics if I was a Tampa fan that had practice went an hour late.
No, but I mean, if you're asking if he's thinking of this different than any other game, I mean, I think that emotions are there.
Well, no, of course
he made his own T-shirt about this.
But that's exactly, and it's funny that I thought the same thing as Brewski, and it's based entirely on that Manning cast. So it's interesting that the Mannings are aware of it.
But that's what Teddy said. Like Teddy was like, I think Bill's going to treat him like we treated Peyton.
And that's so funny because that's, and Rich, I do believe emotion comes into it, and I do believe that he's going to want to throw it all over the field. And that's the thing is that after seeing that Manning cast, I said, I wonder if that's what they'll do to Brady.
But even if he does that, I don't know if they've got the tools to stop him.
But then you're talking about a much closer game.
Sure, that's true.
But so,
I mean, if your goal is to get the game to the fourth quarter, yes, which is like the Patriots' goal,
it has to be
just get the game to the fourth quarter.
Right. So you know, you're talking about the difference between getting blown out and losing by less than a touchdown, or, you know, with the punter's chance of winning the game.
Well, that's the goal. It has to be the goal.
Now, Todd Bowles, you're confident in him as a defensive coordinator, obviously.
I am, but I think the issue right now is personnel, and they came into the season, they felt great about their corners. I know people have taken shots at those guys, but like they really felt like they had 3 24-year-old guys that they could really rely on. Mm-hmm. Two of those three guys aren't playing, and Dean and Murphy Bunning. And Davis has been, you know, there's been like he popped off a lot the offseason about how he's a number one corner and everything else. He hasn't really played like it to this point. So, like, I think if you're going to get him, it's on the back end. And to get him on the back end, you're going to have to be able to hold up and protect Mac Jones.
And can Mac Jones throw that kind of deep ball? He couldn't last week.
Right. And like, you're gonna have to be able to take advantage of those. But the other thing is
bad.
Do you have the receivers to do it?
Yeah, to pull it in. Yeah.
I mean, because here's the thing too, is if I'm the Bucks, like I am trying to get on top of the Patriots fast because I want to put the other quarterback in a situation where he's starting to feel it now.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
Because if you look, like, to me, Fred, the primary, and you talk about how Mac didn't play as well against New Orleans, to me, the primary difference is he was in third and long more, and he was playing from behind.
Yeah.
And that's it. And in situation, like, it's a completely different thing for a young quarterback being in a situation where you're playing with a lead versus where you're playing from behind, and they know you have to throw. And I thought it was an amazing number and a great job by the Patriots the first 2 weeks. They were in third down 28 times. Only 4 of those were third and 10 or longer. That's why Mac played well.
Yeah, yeah.
you know what I mean?
Like, you're right.
Like, Mac played well because they managed those situations. Why hasn't Zach Wilson played well? Because the team around him can't keep, like, can't manage. Like, the team around him isn't good enough for the coaches to manage the situations where he's always in third and short, and he's never playing for more than a touchdown down, which is where Mac Jones was the first 2 weeks.
Well, yeah. I know we got a break, but when we come back, I know that your buddy Seth Wickersham came out with this new book, and there's some new stuff in there that I found interesting.
Yeah, finally, everybody else is going to have it.
That's right. I know. I still don't have it.
I still don't believe you read it.
What?
You read it?
I read it 3.5 months. Part of my problem now is I read it such a long time ago.
If I was an NFL reporter and like a friend of mine handed me an NFL book, I'd be like,
hey. I've got enough of this in my life.
Like,
I lived it.
Yeah, right. I'm like,
so you're projecting. You're projecting your own, like.
Yes, I'm projecting my own thing. If I talked about the NFL and that was all I did for a living and someone handed me a book about the NFL, I'd be like, I'm not reading this.
I mean, I was really interested to see what was in it. I actually read it, believe it or not, on my computer because I had he sent me the PDF.
The one where
in June. So sure. I actually have the PDF on my computer.
So there's some stuff there about the relationship between Robert Kraft and Bill Belichick that I thought was some of the more interesting things that were thrown in there. And I kind of want to get your view because obviously you've covered this team as much as anybody else during that period. And I kind of want to see if this is all being blown out of proportion or whether there are indeed real signs that maybe, just maybe, things aren't as great as we all thought they were.
All right, we'll be back. Here are the headlines.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
This is the home of the Bruins and the Celtics.
It is nothing but a thrill a minute.
And these guys.
Oh, my Lord, what could come next?
Dutcher and Rich on Boston's Home for Sports, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
He's the next quarterback we got to play. You know, they also got, two other quarterbacks on the roster. I know he was in this building for a long time. What he's done could never be taken away from the game of football and what he did. But it's not like we're afraid of what Tom Brady can do. You know, we have to stop their whole offense.
Yeah, I'm the worst singer in this band's history. Rise above. We will fight. We get really bad at the end of our careers and start playing dirges.
You see,
even though Bill Stevenson was a drummer on the song, and he's the greatest punk drummer of all time.
Rollins, this is their best song, though, and Rollins sang it.
Oh, no. No.
In my opinion, I was never a huge Black Flag fan. I wasn't even a big Rollins Band fan.
Well, Black Flag bothered me because they were like the worst LA punk band. Like the Adolescents, the Descendants are the best band of all time, but the Adolescents are better. Agent Orange is better.
Orange is my favorite.
Circle Jerks are better. I mean, like, why Black Flag?
Because they had the cool logo that you could put on your Trapper Keeper.
Well, yeah, they had Pettibone do all the cool flyers, too.
Sure. By the way, speaking of Harry Rollins, one of the greatest movie scenes of all time is in the movie Heat, where Al Pacino comes running into a room. Henry Rollins is over here. You know Henry Rollins, big bodybuilder. Here comes all 5 feet of Al Pacino, and he runs into the room, picks up Henry Rollins, and throws him into a wall. Like, oh, I'm sure that would happen in real life. That seems to work.
Well, he was
the physics
cop.
Of that, you know, kind of are off a little bit.
When you're a cop that gets to wear, like, a regular suit, you get superhero powers.
I guess that is the case.
In the movies.
Well, so, Bert, all right, I want to talk a little bit about some of this stuff that came out from behind the scenes.
Yep.
I know you had been sitting with the Seth Wickersham book for a while now and maybe forgot some of the things until you saw the excerpts come back out.
That's been my biggest problem is that I read it 3.5 months ago. So like now it's like sort of like I'm being asked to remember a bunch of stuff. It's kind of hard.
Well, yeah. I want to ask you to remember stuff that you saw and that you kind of lived through, because there is some indication in all of this that Robert Kraft was calling more shots than it seemed like in the past. I want to find the clip and I'll read it.
He was you don't have to read the clip. He was meddling in personnel decisions, and he was setting limited budget.
To the point where there was also a meeting with Tom Brady and Robert Kraft where they were discussing, without Bill Belichick, bringing in Bill O'Brien as the next coach. And I found that to be somewhat shocking. Are things not what's the relationship of Robert Kraft and Bill Belichick, in your opinion? Is it as a little more frayed than we thought, or is it just guys who've worked together for 20-something years, and that's just what happens?
I think it's manageable, and I think it's always been manageable. And I think one of the things about working with Bill that can be difficult for people who have been there for a long time is you're not going to get, like, a warm and fuzzy, like, relationship on a day-to-day basis.
Does he have, like, a condition? He's like a savant. Kraft called him an Indian savant, but he's like a savant, but maybe he can't deal with people interpersonally.
I think the best description I got of this was from Brian Hoyer, right? And I remember this is a few years ago, and I was talking to him about, I was actually talking to him about Kyle Shanahan, and he said, like, this is a similarity that Kyle has to Bill, where he gets something in his head or he has to do something, and you see him in the hallway and he blows by you. And the first time you see it, you might be like, what the hell?
Yeah, this guy's a dick. What's he doing?
And then you start to learn, this guy is so hyper-focused and so in his own world and so kind of, like, locked into whatever tunnel he's put himself in that everything else around him doesn't matter. And if you are the type of person who, when you see your boss in the hallway, you need acknowledgement every time you walk by him, you're not going to be able to work here. Mm-hmm. It's not that sort of place.
Yeah.
And if you're his boss and you've been his boss for 20 years, you've probably had a lot of those WTF moments.
Sure.
You know what I mean? And if things are going well, then you deal with it.
But
things aren't going as well, it becomes more, it probably annoys you and wears on you a little bit more.
But there's two different levels to that. There is, as you're saying, and then there is meeting with your star quarterback and discussing the future without him.
And that, and part of it is too, Rich, is sometimes when you want to take the temperature on where things are in your organization, you can't do it because that person is so shut off to you, you know, in certain ways.
Wow.
And so I think that that's part of what, the genius of Bill, that's the other side of it. And you all, you hear about people who are sort of these, prodigal figures in their field.
Sure.
And how they have these weird quirks. Well, he has his. What happened in 17, the kind of fault lines and the relationship between Brady and Belichick, that stuff was real. I've mentioned the O'Brien thing to you guys in the past.
You have. Yeah.
And there was a point where there was communication.
Between Kraft and O'Brien?
Through intermediaries, I think that there was some level of would you be interested in this? And I think O'Brien has so much respect for Belichick that never moved to any sort of other level.
Although he said he was trying to get fired, according to Wickersham.
But he was getting to but he was also trying to get fired because the situation there was so horrible with him and the general manager. And I mean, I can remember talking to people down there, Bill O'Brien at that point, based on what he had done his first 4 years in Houston, if he had gotten fired there, he would have gotten another job in 5 seconds. You know, it wasn't like the Bill O'Brien that left Houston in 2020. Bill O'Brien, in 2017, had been to the playoffs, I think, 3 or 4 years and had developed a young quarterback at that point, Deshaun Watson, before Watson got hurt in that freak injury at practice. So
do you think Bill Belichick knew that Kraft was talking to Bill O'Brien at the time?
I don't know for a fact. Seth had that in the book, but yeah. I don't know for a fact that there was direct communication between Kraft and O'Brien. But I do. I mean, I think that there was some exploratory stuff. I think Seth had this in the book too. But there were feelers going the other way too. Like, you know, would Bill be interested in going to this team, or would Bill be interested in going to that team? And you got to remember, some of it was shrouded too in the fact that Bill has sort of turned into Belichick over the years, sort of turned into like a Parcells type of figure, mm-hmm. where, you know, Parcells has always been sort of this kingmaker in the NFL, where like one of the things Parcells loves to do is like he feels like he's moving pieces around the NFL.
Sure.
And I'm putting this coach here and I'm putting this general manager there. And Belichick's really become that. Like, Belichick was largely responsible for Bob Quinn becoming the general manager in Detroit. Belichick was largely responsible for Doug Marrone keeping the job in Jacksonville. Mm-hmm. Like, Bill's become like sort of this kingmaker behind the scenes in the NFL. And so, like, when things were bad here, there was always the question, because people around the league would always bounce stuff off of him, or owners would come to him and ask him about this coach or this scout or who would you hire here. And so, like, I mean, it's fair to say, like, he had contact with a lot of other teams. And so is it possible that at one point maybe it was like, hey, if I weren't here anymore, like, would you be willing to do X or Y or Z?
Mm-hmm.
Like, that existed.
What about now? Like, what if this team doesn't win? Do you think that the loyalty part of it, or any of that, is the relationship at a point where it wouldn't be tough for Bill Belichick to go somewhere else? And do you happen to know how many years he has left on his contract?
I don't know how many years.
That's a mystery.
Yeah, I don't know. And that's always
I've heard two. I've heard this and another one. But
that's always been under lock and key. I don't think Bill wants to, like, sort of leave a house on fire. You know what I mean? Like, so I think, like, whenever he leaves here, I think he'd like to leave the place in the sort of shape where whoever gets it next, whether it's Josh or someone else, winds up like having like the table set to, you know, and you're probably not going to leave a championship team, but like have the table set where you can succeed long term, have the quarterback in place, which it looks like he might now. I just like I don't think like he's going to, if this is a 500 team, like it looks like it's a 500 team, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Like, I'm not sure that would be how he would leave.
Well, we were talking about this earlier this week, Bert. I mean, you think about all the money the Patriots spent. If they lose this weekend, they're 1-3, and the odds of them getting to the playoffs, I mean, I don't think anyone in this room thinks they can go 9-4 the rest of the way. So let's say the Patriots spend all that money.
All right, John, I'm sorry, we don't have time. I'm not being rude. We don't have time. We have 45 seconds.
Okay.
All right. So, Burt Breer, MMQB, thank you so. I mean, you're looking at me like I'm a dick. We have to break. We have to get
not
the commercials
you,
in.
Like anything.
All right.
What do you do to go to break?
All right, Burt. Thank you so much for the time, sir. Maybe you and Rich can hook up again in Nantucket over Halloween.
The Rock.
Go to the Sisk.
All right. There you go. All right. We'll be right back, and we have our contest winner. We will figure that all out in just a moment.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.